Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Kelly here. Of course, 1450 KOBE. And we've got a interesting story. Cheese supplier for Pizza Hut, Domino's, brings in a animal welfare policy after New Mexico dairy abuse video. And there was an undercover video at a Chavez County dairy, a leading supplier of cheese to major American pizza chains. And they've brought in after seeing this graphic video of the abuse of animals, they've decided they're not going to be buying cheese from this place. This is Leprino Foods out of Denver. The new policy requires its dairy to keep a safe and sanitary environment, provide pain relief during disbudding, dehoarding, procedures that, affect these animals, and give appropriate veterinary care for, not just, cutting the horns off. They got to give them some pain relief and stuff like that. Hidden camera footage came out last September by a group called Mercy for Animals, showed cows at Winchester Dairy getting punched, kicked, whipped, and even shocked on their genitals. And Mercy for Animals says they also filmed workers dragging sick and injured cows with tractors. And they were temporarily shut down. And so Leprino Foods is the world's largest mozzarella cheese producer. So that's the kind of coverage they were not looking for. So who are you picking in this race? Is it Scott Walker? Is it the cruise missile? do you like? I mean, you know, gotta admit it. Would you vote for a libertarian candidate, for example? Would you vote for Rand Paul? Now, here's one of the things that's been said about Rand Paul, is he goes off his gut, and here is the problem with, if you want to say it's a problem for libertarians, is that they don't stand for necessarily a lot. They don't want the government to do a lot. They don't believe in foreign policy that's interventionist. So when they ask Rand Paul what he wanted to do with ISIS, and I mean, when he said we need to go in and blow them to smithereens, that was something that some people off guard. But I mean, realistically speaking, how many people in this country would say, let's do nothing no matter what happens around the rest of the world? And that might be reflective of the early American idea, but don't forget that, you know, when the founders were putting stuff together, we were still a small series of colonies. Europe had been torn apart by war for decades or even centuries, and, you know, America wanted to do its own thing. It was small. We were small. We were just trying to survive. When we finally went to war with England, it was because we wanted to be left alone, right? We wanted to not be screwed with. So with that in the background, of course, somebody like Thomas Jefferson is going to come along and say, let's not be intervening in these wars, because we're talking about large, strong countries, and America was much smaller. I mean, we didn't have much of an army when we started the Revolutionary War. So now, fast forward a couple hundred years, America now is the dominant force in the world and has been for quite a while. How could we realistically not be involved overseas? I mean, what would that look like? So, you know, that's what I think about. 523-1450 to call in if you want to comment on that. But does Rand Paul have, would people feel comfortable enough with libertarianism to vote for a libertarian and say, let's find out what a libertarian would do? Somebody like Obama, while he was certainly different coming in, he was out of the left. I mean, people, you know, he's a Democrat. People had an understanding of where he came from. They may not have been able to predict a lot of the stuff he did, but I think libertarian is a lot different in that sense. All right, so I was gonna cover more on this ISIS camp over in Juarez, but I had like a 10-minute video on it, but I just don't want to play that because it just seems like it's a made up story, you know. So I mean, if it's not, I'm sure that we'll find out soon enough. But it was kind of discouraging to see that it seems like we've been gamed a couple of times by, you know, I don't know what's going on, but I looked up a Judicial Watch, and Judicial Watch was, Larry Klayman stopped running Judicial Watch in 2003. He was a guy that was on Clinton's case. He spent a lot of time in court trying to get documents and trying to get some transparency on some of the stuff with Clinton. Then he left to run for Senate. Then there was a war between Larry Klayman and the Judicial Watch. I don't even know anything about Judicial Watch anymore. They used to be kind of a watchdog, you know. But these days, you know, you got to be a little bit skeptical, even groups on the right, even if you're a conservative, that you would you know, try to figure out where people are coming from and get a feel for, you know, the things that people are putting out, and not, you know, we got to be careful if we're conservatives from being gamed, because these are kind of desperate times these days. And according to conservatives, and, you know, that puts an extra emphasis on stuff here. Okay. Here's Pete Coryell, The Things We Do for Love, a little bit of comedy clip. Kelly O'Connell, 627. It is 57 degrees outside. 81 is the high, 50. It's the low. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOB. I'm Kelly O'Connell. 523-1450 to call in. I'm going to do a little comedy here, but we're going to come back before. If Walt Rubel does make it here. And just I'm going to give you a little stuff on feminism in just a second, and or just a minute, and see what your opinion is. We'll be right back. Kelly here, and 6:33. It is 57 degrees right now. 81 is the high today, 58 the low, about 7 miles per hour of wind, or let's put it this way, supposedly 10 miles an hour, under 10 miles an hour. All right, so the city councilors unanimously rejected a proposed rezoning of the land at Tashiro and Valley Drive after hearing strong opposition to the project from residents and local businesses. And so I guess the people heard Walmart and were not impressed. Developers for the project can still resubmit the proposal with modifications in 6 or 12 months. So 20 residents and most counselors express their disagreement with the zoning change, and which would have been for the 7.3 acres that would have turned a vacant agricultural land into high-intensity commercial property for a grocery store. So we're not going to get probably anytime soon another Walmart. We've got another Walmart, a new Walmart. You know, there needs to be some studies, and I'm seriously all in favor of, you know, everybody having an equal opportunity. But there does need to be some investigation into what the impact is of Walmart's on other businesses and on the community. You know, whether it's up or down, and you know, good or bad. Obviously, there's going to be somewhat of a mixed bag, but I'm just saying that no business probably has 100% positive impact on a community, generally speaking. But it just seems like now that Walmart has been associated with FEMA camps and all this, there needs to be some sort of an investigation. And you know, if a store comes in like that, and I'm not totally opposed to Walmart, but you can't mistake the of these places just so big that, you know, when these businesses come in like that, what is the impact on the smaller businesses? Obviously, it's going to put some of the places out of business, but it would be, I think, worthwhile to revisit what the definition of monopoly is. I think monopoly is to come in and totally dominate a market, and Walmart may not do that, might seem to do that, but maybe just have the conversation about it and see where it leads. It is better, all things considered. Would you rather have a store the size of Walmart come in from outside, or would you rather have a store, a local store that was giant like Walmart? Obviously, local is better because it's more connected to the community. All right. I've got this clip that I was going to play yesterday. This is a woman that yesterday we had this kind of like really, I found irritating fun on feminism just to listen to it. It was like fingers across a chalkboard, but just, you know, defending feminism, and, you know, to be a feminist means you stand up for truth and justice and equality and all these things. All right. Here's the opposite side. And this is from Prager University. And this woman who's giving this is actually a very famous woman in feminism, Christina Hoff Sommers. But I found this to be interesting.
Thank you.
All right. So, and that is, you know, it's a very well put together piece there by Miss Summers. She is a very popular writer in the area of feminism, and has been a big voice for them. Now, I looked up feminism, and I found the definition in Webster's. One, the theory of the political, economic, and social equality of the sexes, and number two, organized activity on behalf of women's rights and interests. And I think that there's got to be a reason that there's so much vitriol and anger and fury towards feminism on YouTube. It's almost unparalleled with pro-feminism versus anti-feminism. So it seems like feminism as a formal movement is being rejected, but my sense is that it is being formally rejected, but informally has already been absorbed. I mean, I think this is one reason that a lot of these women are rejecting it, is they've already achieved everything that they needed out of it. But there is this idea out there that one of the worst things you can do is run into a feminist, you know, experientially speaking. Somebody introduces themselves, a female, or God forbid, a guy, I'm a feminist. Bad things happen afterwards. Whether that's accurate or not, there's a lot of men who, if they got off record, would say, I absolutely hate feminism. It's disgusting. It is just infuriating. It assumes the worst about men in every situation. You know, it's constantly, you know, lifting up women as victims and putting down men, and that we've been through this feminist revolution, married with children, all of these anti-male role models, and men as the leaders being stupid, you know, men as rapists and all these things. There's a lot of fury out there towards feminism, and I think it's finally coming around, and it looks like it's in danger of wiping the movement out. But anyway, Kelly O'Connell, 6:45, it is 57 degrees, 81 is the high, 58 the low, about 7 mph on the winds. It's going to be clear today. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. The number to call in, 523-1450, if you want to, you know, the board is not lighting up like I thought it might have been. Maybe it's a dead topic, but anyway, we'll take a break and be right back. Good morning, Kelly here. And in theory, I've got a guest coming on from the Sun News this morning, Mr. Rubel. Now, there is another kind of feminism that I just wanted to point out to you. It's what they call third wave feminism. It starts in about the 1990s, and it was came up as a kind of a response to the failures and backlash against the second wave feminism of the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And this is Rebecca Walker comes up with this third wave claim. But anyway, it's third wave feminism is part of what you probably react to when you hear about feminism, queer theory, getting rid of gender, stuff like that, being more open-minded about pornography, sex work, prostitution, and all this stuff. It is a very, it's kind of nihilistic, meaning there's no rules, but it's still feminism. Here's a little clip on that. And 523-1450 on KOBE if you want to give an opinion. Anyway, kind of blabbing on about this stuff. But, I mean, what you've got in third wave feminism is this obvious, very obvious connection to socialism, in which there's not going to be a connection between what people do and what they earn. So, you know, the feminists have a right to be home with their children while somebody else is working for them. And what's the difference between that and a traditional family? I mean, that's somewhat ridiculous. Why not have the person supporting you be the father of your children, number one? And number two, this kind of radical idea that was unleashed in the 60s and 70s, 80s, 90s, whenever it really took hold, that there is no such thing as gender. And these, you know, your gender is just totally created by society, and therefore the net result is the sex symbol that used to be named, what's the guy that hangs out with the Kardashians? Bruce Jenner becomes Bruce without genitals. He's going to get a sex change. I mean, all of this stuff coming together is just crazy. And we've got a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Go, Bruce Jenner.
Yeah, I got it.
That's why they call them feminazis, right?
I mean, where's feminism heading anyway?
I don't know. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much everybody knows that in America and in Europe, the feminist achieves pretty much everything that they wanted to ever achieve, and now they're still complaining.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's frustrating because, you know, it just goes to show you, this is like a war, and there's never going to be any end to the war, and the other side is always going to ask for more concessions. And now the women want to be like traditional mothers at home with somebody else supporting them, but they want that person to be the government supporting them so they can, you know, they don't have to be dependent on the father, which plays havoc with the children.
They want to get pregnant and then get onto the benefits that come from that, housing and food, yeah, and everything like that.
Why is that better than the traditional family? At least you have the two people that brought somebody into the world connected to the kid's life. And whether, you know, that's a big deal to feminists or modern society, it is a huge deal to kids when they look at the psychology and the reaction to kids who lose contact with their birth parents.
It'll be a breakdown of society.
It already is. It's already happened right in the middle of probably the biggest transformation in the family in history. Anyway, I got to take a break here. Anything else?
Yeah, they just during the news break real quickly. They said this is becoming one of the worst places to retire because of taxes and crime.
I believe it.
I do too. Okay, Kelly.
Have a great day. Bye. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. Folks, we'll take a break here and be right back. Maybe feminism is dead and I didn't even know it. Maybe we can do how feminism affects the weather. Who was that? Barbara Lee? Sounds like smoke, doesn't it? Hate smoke. It's Kelly here, and actually we've got Bob Endlich, and we've got his weather statements and prognostications and warnings, and also we've got Walt Rubles coming in. Here's third wave feminism from the Uncyclopedia. Third wave feminism is an academic term for the feminist movement as it existed between 1990 when Pretty Woman killed feminism in 2008, when Twilight dug up its corpse and killed it again. All right, so a little humor there. Even Roseanne Barr says, I might love pot, I might be losing my vision, which I just found out here, but I'm not a feminist. So if Roseanne Barr is rejecting feminism, I don't think it's got any hope. Now, there's a big article in the New Yorker, the battle, and this is just from last year, the battle between radical feminism and transgenderism. If you're spending all your time fighting for women, and trying to empower them and say women are special, women have been downtrodden and all this. At the same time, you're saying that there is no gender. That's a contradiction, and it's got to be worked out somehow. Getting rid of gender, I don't see how that really helps feminism in the long term. But it's a good article. It's from the New Yorker. You might want to look that up. What is a woman? It's kind of an interesting one. All right, folks, let me take you out of here. We're going to come back and talk weather and local. Here's Romeo's tune, Steve Forbert. Kelly O'Connell, you're listening to AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 to call in, and we will be back after a break on the hour. Now, after shaking your hand, I do. Good morning. It is Kelly O'Connell, 706, and AM Las Cruces. And not a whole lot in the news cycle nationally, internationally. Giorgio Armani is saying don't dress gay, and then gay people and feminists got really angry at him. We were talking about feminism earlier. Didn't really seem to hit a chord. Maybe feminism is over. I just didn't know it. But I've got it, Bob Endlich here, the weather guy, and I've got also got Walt Rubel, who it was shocked to see Bob here. Bob was curious to see Walt here, and yet we're coexisting in this natural environment called a radio studio. Now, Bob, you have got for us, and I've got your mic on too, Walt. If you make any side remarks, they're going to be picked up, possibly even censored. So, Bob, what do we have on the weather front here?
Well, tomorrow is Earth Day. And
really?
I was at the first Earth Day, at least the end of it, at UNM back in 1970.
Were you wearing tie-dyed shirt?
Actually, I was in the military. So.
You're in the military?
Yeah, I was. Earth Day was a big deal in 1970.
It was. All right. Let's get some history here, Walt. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying it. Back in the 1970s, when Earth Day, and let's remember, this was when rivers were catching fire, uh-huh. and there was a concern, a legitimate concern people had for the environment, and that's what spawned this massive movement that became Earth Day. So,
and that's absolutely true. You'll remember in 1968, Christmas 1968, Apollo 8 went to the moon, and that picture, that iconic picture of the Earth as the blue marble.
Right.
And the reciting of Genesis from the Apollo 8 astronauts. You know, it really struck a chord in that image of the Earth with the moon in the foreground is something that has been with us. And Walt's absolutely right. The Cuyahoga River caught fire in 1968. There was an earlier one in 1952 where it caught fire. And so there was a lot of concern about the environment. What I want to do is not only mention that as a good thing. Certainly, the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act have been boons for us, and the environment has gotten a lot better. If the oldsters remember, in those days, you could look at utility company and manufacturing company smokestacks, and you could see black stuff coming out. And
isn't that the purpose of a smokestack, to release smoke?
Well, that's true. But now we have scrubbers and electronic precipitators that take that solid material out. And nowadays, it's what comes out of the stack is almost like what comes out of the exhaust of your car, which is carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide, and water. And water will cool and condense, and you get water droplets. And then some people make a big deal about it. That's carbon dioxide. It's not. It's water droplets. It's just water.
Fair enough. Okay, so...
So what I've got to do, what I've got here, is some failed Earth Day predictions. From
1970, is that
from right? From 1970 and okay. Some a little bit later on.
Yeah. Okay.
In those days...
Did you want me to set the stage by playing the Apollo 1968...
Well, let's do it.
Hard to believe now NASA is being used to promote Islam, according to,
I think his name is Bolden.
Anquan Bolden, the wide receiver?
No, I think his name is Charles Bolden, and I think he's the NASA administrator. But
they came out and said that NASA was going to be used to help promote
Muslim outreach.
Muslim outreach. Kind of a little transition there. All right, so Bob Endlich here, the weather guy. And Bob, you've got a list of failed predictions from Earth Day, and that was the original Earth Day when the Apollo 8 was up there?
Well, that was around Christmas of 1968.
Yeah.
Let's just set the stage a little bit.
All right.
That was Christmas 1968. 1968, the summer of 1968, was also the time that Cuyahoga River in Ohio caught fire.
So was there a crisis at that time, in your opinion, Walt? We got Walt Rubel here, too. Walt, was there a crisis, an environmental crisis, or was it a few outlying events?
No, it wasn't a few outlying events. And I think crisis. I mean, it wasn't a crisis in terms of one event happening. I mean, it was something that built over decades.
Right.
And it wasn't just the Cuyahoga River. It was waterways and airways throughout the country.
Now, Bob, your opinion at the time, did you have any sympathy for the environmental movement? Did you see it as a positive?
Oh, certainly it was a positive because, and I think, the guy who's maligned today, but who really seized the moment was Richard Nixon. And he said, we've got to get out ahead of this.
Is that where the EPA came from?
And the EPA was not created by Congress. It was created by an executive action by Richard Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act have gone a very long distance in cleaning up the mess that had existed probably for at least a half a century.
Yeah, that's right.
And as I said, you could drive through cities and see this black smoke come out. I remember I took an air pollution course in 70 or 71, and there was a thing called a Ringelmann curve where you could go by. And the people who were making dispersion estimates, the source strength or the amount of crud coming out of a chimney, by looking at a grayscale and holding it up and comparing it to the black stuff coming out of the factories.
And there were crises in Los Angeles and New York City and places like that where the air was basically unbreathable, right?
Well, I grew up in Denver, and I would say 2 out of 3 days back then, you couldn't see the mountains. Now that's, maybe 1 or 2 days a year where that's the case. So it was awful. I mean, you look in the morning and you wake up to this just brown,
and so
cruddy
in other
sky.
Words, they were responding to a felt need, a known need.
Sure.
And this was not just 1968. I did a paper in college on this air pollution episode that was in London in 1952.
That famous inversion?
That big famous inversion, a big high pressure area settled over. And when there's high pressure at the surface, there's low wind. So the ability of the atmosphere to disperse the crud that's generated from people burning, they used to call it sea coal. It's actually lignite. But from that episode, I think there were something like 20,000 excess deaths because of the concentration of crud in the air that Walt mentions. And that happened.
Wasn't that an application of Darwinism? The strong were survived while the weak were felled by lignite?
Well,
if respiratory health is what Darwin had in mind, I guess. But
the point is that people saw that this was a bad thing. That when there was a high pressure area and it was cold, this was in, I think, late October.
We have a phone call, by the way. Yeah, this is Kelly. Thanks for the phone call. And who's this?
This is Tom. Two words: Soylent Green.
Soylent Green. It's people, man. It's people.
Anyhow, the point is people saw in the 50s and 60s
things were not getting well and that there needed to be some action to clean up the environment.
Okay, so we're getting to your list. Yeah, so the point is that there was a reason for Earth Day to happen.
Oh, certainly, absolutely. Okay. And what I want to do is bring to the listeners some knowledge of the fact that some of the environmental predictions of disaster just did not happen.
All right, now why you're bringing this up for what reason, Bob?
Because it's Earth Day. Tomorrow is Earth Day, and the campus had some celebrations
all right, so
over
this,
the weekend. So it being a Wednesday, it's not happening on a weekend. So,
so this is my impression of why you're bringing this up, that human predictions have failed in the past related to weather and environment and stuff, and they're failing today, right? I mean, that isn't that...
Oh, sure. That's yeah, where I'm right. That's where I'm
right.
But I just figured I'd set the stage with some of the stuff that happened in the 1960s. And as Walt... And I have mentioned, certainly there was a lot of crud in the air, and there was a very strong need for that. And the guy who's maligned today, Richard Nixon, was the guy who originated the Environmental Protection Agency, and it was during the first couple of years that we got the Clean Air Act and Clean Water Act.
All right, so here's a little bit from Soylent Green, by the way. OMG. The famous line out of the movie Soylent Green. Anyway, we'll be right back to hear some of these failed predictions from Bob Endlich and Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. We will be right back. 523-1450 if you want to call in. Like, I'm obviously in the middle of...
Right. I'm still learning. It's like a cat, you know. The cat gets restless. You bring it to the cat. You open the window, whatever. Hey, Walt, how do you do with the...
This is just my second one, so yeah, you're ahead of me on that. Keith didn't have any sound effect.
No, he didn't. Keith had a microphone. He wasn't sure how to work it at that time. Where is the rest of this story?
Okay.
So we could have three Walmarts, but we can't have four. Is that what they said, basically?
Well, you know, I used to visit Walmart.
I don't know.
It's Kelly 721. It is 57 degrees outside. It's going to be 81 as a high, 58 as the low, 7 miles per hour of wind, a clear day. It's pretty nice outside. It's getting a little sniffly. There's allergens in the air. Maybe the next show we can do on
Bob, we've got Bob Endlich here, the weather guy. Maybe the next show we can do on allergens and stuff like that, stuff in the air, pollen.
Well, certainly this time of year, we get a lot of sun. And what happens is, it gets clear overnight, and we get the cold temperatures at the surface, and it takes a while for the air to heat up. Once it heats up, you mix those strong wind speeds down to the surface, and that's what gets the pollen.
Oh, okay. All right. I was wondering what we were working to there. All right. So anyway, these are predictions that Bob has brought onto the show from the original Earth Day.
Right. And so you recall in 1968, Paul Ehrlich wrote a book called The Population Bomb.
Yes, indeed.
And he claimed that the battle to feed humanity has been lost, and there will be major food shortages in the U.S.
Neo-Malthusianism.
Malthusianist, is that the right word?
Reverend Malthus, who said the earth was running out of food and Everybody was going to starve. That's back in the 18th century?
Right. Anyhow, he said in the 1970s, hundreds of millions are going to starve to death. And he said that 65 million people would die of starvation between 1980 and 1989. And by 1999, the U.S. population would decline to 22.6 million. Now, Walt, did you starve to death in the 1980s?
No, I did not.
Do you remember anyone in the U.S.?
Well, anyone, sure. I mean, you can't go that road of our former state health secretary who said there was no hunger in New Mexico. But starving to death, no, that doesn't happen.
That's right. It doesn't happen. So even in the U.K., the New Scientist magazine, that's the logical equivalent of the Scientific American,
okay,
underscored this speech that Paul Ehrlich gave in an editorial that was called In Praise of Prophets. He claimed that by the year 2000, the UK would be a small group of impoverished islands inhabited by 70 million hungry people. He said, if I were a gamble, I would take even money that England would not even exist in the year 2000. And this is a speech he made in September 1970.
Where was I with my billfold? I'd have taken even money on that.
That's right. And he also said back in 1968, I have yet to meet anyone familiar with the situation who thinks that India will self-sufficient in food by 1971, if ever.
Yeah.
But now, the Green Revolution has happened,
sure,
and certainly that's one of the failed Earth Day prophecies. And what's the great thing about the internet is this stuff is instantly available. How to put the search terms into Google.
The great thing and the horrible thing. I mean, it is all out there on the internet. So that's right.
That's the good news. The bad news is you have to be able to spell.
That's true.
All right. So more failed predictions.
Another failed prediction. In 1974, the U.S. Geological Survey announced that the U.S. had only a 10-year supply of natural gas. And just recently, the American Gas Association says that our gas supplies are sufficient for the next 1,000 to 2,500 years. Certainly, fracking has
changed
a world of difference.
So it goes to show you it's not the amount of resource, it's the ability to extract the resource.
Well, and the ability of good people and clever people to overcome technological obstacles. And certainly, in a free society, people have the ability to do that. You know, we were talking about air pollution earlier. You see a car driving down the street with blue smoke coming out of the exhaust. That is a rare event.
It is.
And it used to be
common.
Quite common.
That's right.
Back in the 50s. Well,
that's exactly right.
So certainly, our technology and our ability to make things happen have a lot to do with the success of the U.S. and I think the export of some of that success into the world at
large.
There was a claim in 1970, in 10 years, all the important animal life in the sea will be extinct. Large areas of coastline will have to be evacuated because of the stench of dead fish.
That's very graphic.
Very, very graphic and also very wrong.
If I pay $200,000 for a house, I'm not going to leave because there's a little dead fish smell. I mean, I'm just saying that's me. But
well, you know, where are people building houses? They're building houses next to the water, and that's the reason that when there is a hurricane, that there's so much damage.
But your point is, Bob, that and we could go on, and I get it. I mean, there were a lot of prophecies made on this issue, as with every issue, that were way overboard, that turned out to be wildly wrong. But they were made based on the arc at the time. All of these things that we've talked about that have changed that, they weren't predicting. They weren't envisioning.
That's true. We were talking about 1970.
Hold on a second, though. Your point, though, Walt, is that, sure, we got it wrong in the beginning. The baby steps of the science, now we're coming into our own and we can put more faith in this stuff? Is that
no, not necessarily. My point is that those prophecies were made based on life as that person knew it at that time. And the trend at, you know, how things had been going up until that point. And not long after that point, the pendulum started to swing back.
So let me ask you something, Walt, put you on the spot here a little bit. When you hear some of the doomsday prophecy of the environmentalists,
right?
Does the bell go off that maybe it's overkill or it's
sometimes, sure. Listen, whenever I come in and discuss this with Bob, I understand that I'm out of my depth here. I mean, he has a knowledge on this issue that I don't have. When you say bells go off, that's what I do have. I think I have a pretty good filter, decipher of what rings true or what seems plausible and what doesn't.
What Hemingway called a BS meter.
Yeah, there you go.
523-1450 to call in if your BS meter's going off. Oh, go ahead, Bob.
Well, let's talk about a more recent prediction made in the UK by a prominent newspaper. And the prominent newspaper quoted Dr. David Viner, who's a senior research scientist, climate research unit at the University of East Anglia. He said, within a few years, quote, children aren't going to know what snow is, and winter snowfall will be a rare and exciting event. And this is in the UK Independent, March 2000. You may not recall it, but in December 2000, the UK Mail Online had a headline, coldest December since records began as to -10°C bring travel chaos across Britain. The people that kept the sand and salt for the roads believe the global warming stuff, and they, within a few days, they ran out. And December 2010 was a terrible winter in England. They lost billions of dollars in trade. Airlines were brought to their knees, and road transports, you know, we call them trucks, they call them lorries, were unable to traverse the roads in the UK, and it persisted for the entire month.
And one of the disasters of this stuff, you can say, well, somebody got it wrong, and therefore there's people have the wrong idea. But you know, there was situations where they got rid of stuff like snowplows, you know, in some communities, and
then found, ooh, this didn't work.
And it's been the snowiest season that I can recall back east. So
well,
I mean,
the last 2 years have been especially nasty. But you know what they're doing is they are repeating those late 1970s winters that happened in the East Coast. You know, there was an In Search Of episode that talked about the possibility of a coming ice age back in the 1970s.
Yeah, there was articles in Time magazine and stuff.
That's right. There was a Time and a Newsweek article. You know, there's another one of the ones that was made by Michael Oppenheimer. And he said that by 1995, the greenhouse effect would be desolating the heartland of America and Eurasia with horrific drought, causing crop failures and food riots. He's a Princeton guy. Call last year in the U.S., corn and soybean crops set records. We had in Iowa better than 200 bushels per acre for corn, and better than $13 billion for the total harvest. So with such a bumper crop, the price has fallen. That's the problem.
All right.
Too much of it.
All right. So sum up your report here, because we're going to shift on to Walt's little commentary from Walt. But what do you want people to know about the doomsdaying?
Well,
doomsaying.
The forecast of catastrophic warming has not happened. We've had no warming in the U.S. for 18 years and 4 months. And so
I thought it was 3 months.
Well, that was last month.
Oh, okay.
So, but we've got records of the greenhouse warming from the satellites.
All right.
It hasn't warmed.
Here is a commentary on this. And Walt, Bob, it seems like people always want to live in the most important time. So the Christians were always debating over whether it was the apocalypse was upon them. And the Muslims are trying to bring in the apocalypse now through ISIS and stuff, maybe through a little more bloody means. But there is this idea of the collapse of capitalism and this kind of the workers like throwing off their chains and rising up. And right. There's going to be this world apocalyptic event. It seems like it's in people's DNA.
Wait, but not we've just got leftism. It's in rightism, too.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
It's on both sides.
Yeah.
I got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Tom.
Yes.
We should rename Earth Day Al Gore Day.
Al Gore Day.
Yes. And do you remember when we were kids and they used to have the bug truck go through the neighborhood with all the fumes coming out of it?
Yeah, those were happy days.
Control.
And yeah. I remember kids on bicycles following it down the road.
And occasionally dropping from the fumes.
Yes. Okay.
Thanks, Tom. All right. Okay, folks.
Can I say something?
Go ahead. Nobody's stopping. And this is a free speech forum.
Those kids were idiots. If you're a kid listening to this show today and you see the vector control going down the street, don't go running, chasing behind it, sucking up the chemicals. Don't do that.
It's like natives worshiping a cargo cult. They probably never saw a truck before. All right. So you said Ark. It made me think of Ark of a Diver, Stevie Winwood. We're going to come back and I'm not cutting you out, by the way, Bob. You can continue to throw out your stuff here. But we're going to talk to Walt a little bit about some local issues. Kelly O'Connell, 733 AM, 1450 AM, Las Cruces, and 523-1450 to call in. We'll be right back.
Ah, those were the days. Sucked up the chemicals.
When I was in Vietnam, we had the C-123.
I'm Kelly here, of course, 737, flying the friendly skies. Got Walt Rubel from the Sun News, the local rag, in, and Bob Endlich. And we're talking off the air about DDT. I ask if there was fake science that came in or overblown science on something that everybody agrees was a real need to get rid of some of the bad practices in pollution. But then there were bad predictions of the future. And then I asked, was DDT, they got rid of it because it supposedly was killing bald eagles and stuff like that. They got rid of it around the world, and they say tens of millions of people died from malaria and stuff like that when they got rid of it.
It's still happening. It's still happening. In many parts of Africa, the way that they fight malaria is have kids have mosquito nets, and adults too. Because when the U.S., let's just back up a little bit, the first head of the EPA was a former governor of Alaska's
Hickel,
Wally Hickel, H-I-C-K-E-L. And for some reason, and people don't know exactly why, he had a lot of information on his desk that said that DDT is of great benefit. But there were these concerns about the thinning eggs of the bald eagles. And so he outlawed it, even though the vast majority of the science said it is not
all right. So if it's not a problem, I know it had a bad PR run there, but why not bring it back now?
That's a very good question. I don't have the answer to that.
I'm going to look up how many people have died since they got rid of DDT.
Just to be clear, DDT was a pesticide, correct?
Right. It's a diethyl.
But we have other pesticides. So there has been nothing that's come along since then that has been able to replace it.
I think the answer is cost and efficacy and effectiveness, because certainly in the 50s, one of the great fears was people in the U.S. dying of malaria. Back in the 1800s, when the Rio Grande Valley was first settled, it was known for malaria. The Rio Grande had these meanders in it, and down around the old list, that was a malaria area. So this has been with us for a long time, and the DDT made great progress in reducing the threat of malaria, especially in the U.S.
It says, according, and this is from Discover the Networks, according to Dr. Robert Desowitz, professor of tropical medicine at the University of North Carolina, quote, from colonial times until the 1940s, malaria was the American disease, annually afflicting as many as 7 million Americans and killing several thousand. So,
that's what I'm saying.
In other countries, though, in India during the 1930s, 100 million people contracted malaria each year. In Africa, hundreds of millions of people per year became infected. Millions of people lost their lives. So then when they got rid of DDT, it affected the ability to cut back on malaria in Africa and India and places like that.
Yeah, that's the crime. And to me, that's a crime because, we hear about how global warming is going to kill people, but the malaria is actually killing people and has been killing people because we have not deployed and made available to the people of Africa and India this very effective killer of mosquitoes.
In South America, for example, malaria cases fell by 33% or one-third between 42 and 46 from using DDT. In 1948, there was not a single malaria-related death in all of Italy. After DDT was sprayed widely in India's Kamara district, where 50,000 had typically contracted malaria in any given year, the number of newly diagnosed malaria cases dwindled to about 1,500. But after they got rid of DDT for the concerns of the environment, then the numbers went back up.
And it's still a great, great problem, especially to young people in Africa. And you know, see people suffer like that, I think needlessly, is just, it's a crying shame. And, you know, there's, like I said, there's all this, to me, alarmism and bullying about catastrophic global warming when it's not happening. Certainly, as I indicated earlier, the satellites show there has been no greenhouse warming for 18 years and 4 months. You know, that's crazy. Back when Bob Dole was running for president against Bill Clinton.
Yeah, okay. Well, folks, take another break here. And I want to get, if Walt, can I get maybe a little pushback on some of the criticisms of the... Would you be able to provide a little pushback on these, some of the stuff that Bob's saying in terms of...
A little bit. Like I said, I'm out of my depth. There are people who could do it better than me, but sure.
All right. And I got Walt Ruppel here from Sun News and Bob Endlich. And be right back at 743 on AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell. The number to call in, 523-1450. We'll be right back. Better to have clips.
Clips.
Well, good morning to you. It's 7:46. If you're just tuning in, we're having a spirited discussion with Bob Endlich over the failed predictions of the Earth Day, and also have Walt Ruppel here. Now, Walt, what's a principled response to this idea that all of the environmental predictions are made up or overstated?
Well, you know, listen, Bob is a scientist, and so when Bob says, you know, I'm looking at charts of climactic data over the last X number of months, I got nothing to come back on that with. I'm not looking at those same.
All right.
Charts
how about
data.
This? When you see, and you're a little bit more progressive, but when you see the statements out of some of the global warming people,
right,
and especially the statements over the years, you know, no sea ice left, the people, you know, where this water's going to rise and bury all of these low lying areas,
right.
Things that seem like they haven't happened or they're not happening, Do you think in the movement, you know, people in the far left, that there is a sense of doubt, or is it, do you think they're doubling down on it?
No, I don't think there's a sense of doubt. I mean, I haven't seen anything come out from the scientific community that gives me a sense of doubt. I mean, what I see is enormous 95% or more agreement.
Consensus
of people who do study this all the time, like Bob does. But Bob is in the minority of that group.
And my comeback to that is, it doesn't matter what anyone says. It doesn't matter what I say. It matters what the data,
what the science
what
says,
what the measurements say.
And I can't argue with
that. You know, we talked about sea level rise. Actually, there's a lot of data from history and from measurements to show that 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, sea level was much higher than it was today. And actually, when the little ice age set in around 1300, sea levels fell, perhaps a meter or two. So we're just coming back.
We've got a call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Morning, Kelly. Rob.
Yeah, Rob, hope you're doing well. Thanks for the call. And what's on your mind?
Hey. Yeah, so that, you know, your guest from the paper just said the Walt. Consensus thing. Yeah, well, that's totally debunked, because that statistic that the left likes to try to throw up about the consensus, it was only a consensus of like 96 of the weather scientists out of what, almost like 10,000 who were part of that group. So, you know, when they say consensus, it makes it sound like all the weather scientists. Well, no, it's just a small little fraction of them.
Well, Rob,
the majority of them believe that there isn't man-made global warming.
Rob, where are you getting this information from?
I found it on the web several weeks ago when I was looking into this. I can't give you a specific reference, but just look it up, the consensus theory, you know, and you'll find all about it.
All right. I've got something to say about that. Perhaps a better metric would be a questionnaire sent out to a number of professional meteorologists from the American Meteorological Society. And it's about half and half. About half the people say that that man is causing significant warming, and half say it's not. And, you know, certainly carbon dioxide is a greenhouse gas, and certainly adding carbon dioxide to the air should make the earth warmer, all things being equal. But things are never equal. If you look at the data, and again, I keep using that term, 1,000 years ago, it was a lot warmer than it is today. And 2,000 years ago, a lot warmer.
Walt? Okay, I wasn't ready to jump in there. I probably should have been.
Well, that's all right. I mean, I'm just wondering, like, there's a lot of people out there that believe in global warming, and what is the response?
I disagree with the caller. But I don't have data to say, here is how I can prove you're wrong. All I know is that whenever it seems like there, and it isn't just one, he's talking about there was this one, you know, group of 90 or whatever scientists, and they, no, it's not just one. It seems like every 3 or 4 years, there is another huge group of global scientists, and they all seem to, not unanimously, but with a very large consensus, come to the same agreement.
Rob, I've got another caller. Anything else?
That's it for now. I'll look on the line, online, and if I find something, I'll call you back.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Pedro.
Pedro, yes. Hope you're doing well, and what's on your mind?
Okay, this whole global warming, let me shed some light on it for everybody. Okay?
Okay.
This has turned into a political battle, and it doesn't need to be. People just need to stand up because they're drowning in knee-deep water. The Republican/conservative component states that, oh, it's all a bunch of baloney. There's no man-made global warming. The liberal/Democrat people are saying, well, man is causing all. I don't need to go over that. The point is, as a average person, as an average citizen of the United States, it's clear to me that maybe we are causing some of this. I don't know. But we have desire to be clean and